Previously.
One, two, three.
Rated the X-Men Animated Review Show.
It's loading. Here we go.
Here we are. Welcome to X-Rated, the X-Men Animated Review Show. We are your hosts, Dev Sissa, and my co-host is, Dev Sissa, and let me just say, 16 bits is all you need.
Sooner or later, you gotta grow up. Otherwise, reality will smack you right in the face.
No, 16 bits is all you need. And anyway, with me, as always, is my co-host.
He's got a pattern of attack. Typical boss battle shenanigans. I just need to wait for it to cycle.
I've been waiting. I'm waiting out that cycle, and I think it's about to end.
It's been a while.
It does, Andre.
Good to say that cycle's been going for a while.
I will. Well, you're a pretty complicated villain, but I just about have the timing down.
Villain? Oh, my God. I thought I was more of an anti-hero.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, X-Men go up against anti-heroes.
I mean, I'll join the team later after there's a trial. You know,
villains view themselves as anti-heroes, Andre?
Well, that's just the way now, is the show does like a season. I mean, on modern shows, they'll do like a season of a show where the bad guy is like super cool, like too cool. And then like they'll beat him. And then the second season will be like him like or her going over all their life decisions and then eventually becoming a good guy at the end of season two. And then, you know, three is them all trying to work together. So that's just how it goes. It's like we're now at the part of the season where, you know, where we're forging an easy alliance.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
I don't think the show's been very contentious overall, but you know, if you feel that way, then that's all
right. No, I don't think I do.
No, that's good.
We're here to review X-Men 97, Season 1, Episode 4, Motendo. And that's the one we've all been looking forward to. At least I have. I mean, it's X-Men, it's 16-bit video games, it's everything 10, 12 year old me cared about.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's a super fun episode.
It could not be more niche for that age of me, because that's before I discovered Star Trek. Really, all I cared about back then was X-Men and 16-bit video games.
I had my mic away from my mouth. I didn't realize until just now. So hopefully you can hear me all right before. All right, cool.
Now you're like obscenely loud.
Okay. Well, this is where it normally is. I just set it on the side of the desk that I'm not using. Right. Do you notice that in the intro we get some extra scenes? I know we generally do with this one, but there's a couple of noticeable ones.
Yeah, well, Mojo was in it, which was fun.
Yeah, but we also, Forge is in it this time.
Yeah, and Forge.
And we see him looking, we see him in the distance while, like, Polaris is in the foreground.
It's what they've done here is, like, genius. And I'll blow my X point on it right now, that's fine. It's already a meme-able thing that you don't skip the intro of X-Men the Animated Series because it rocks so hard. Now they've just basically created that, but made it even more unskippable by adding new material each time. Now it's like the most unskippable intro in the history of television.
Well, what I think they've done is reanimate things that have happened in the previous episodes of the show in the new style of the show and incorporate them into the intro. Yes, because crazy. Because I went through a few of them, and like there's the scene where Polaris is holding, is it Havoc? Who's her love interest in
Havoc
in that episode where and Forge is in the background, which is like the episode he was in, like kind of four centered in that X Factor episode. We also see Jubilee facing off against Mojo with Longshot beside her on the ground, and then we also see Lilandra pounding on a key, like a desk, with her dad behind them. And
that was in the last episode's intro as well, the Lilandra thing.
Oh, I didn't notice it in the last one.
Yeah.
So, which I believe was in like this the season, you know, when they had the whole fight with her brother and all that stuff. So, right, yeah, you know, right. So it's all, and there's also a Phoenix scene, which I don't remember seeing before, but it was probably there before, where like she's becoming the Phoenix and Cyclops is like in the foreground, or in the foreground with his hand out, like, no.
But they've definitely added some new material to these intros. So it could be new material as well. It could be,
yeah.
Because like all that morph stuff is like new.
Well, you see Bobby in his X-Men costume in the part, you see Forge as well. So, you know, it's all from that episode. Interesting. And there's like some nods to the when Charles, he was seeing a lot more Charles, actually. We're seeing the one where Charles was trying to get into the Hellfire Club's mind with, and White Queen blocks him out. So that's in the intro, too. So it's all probably stuff coming back. Well, that, or it's just to remind you about how we saw these people before in previous episodes when they start showing up in this iteration of the show.
That could be.
Yeah, c'est possible. But it's cool intro.
Cool intro. Did this episode live up to your expectations since we were all so hyped for it?
Yes and no. I liked it very much. I wouldn't say it had as much meat on its bones as the other episodes have with, like, you know, usually there's like a fairly important either emotional beat. No, I'm not done. Emotional beat or something like that. I'm talking about the Jubilee side of things right now.
But if you take the complete episode, it has that.
If you do, yes. But then it's almost like, because it's two half episodes, it's not enough time for either of those to really matter. Like, to me, like, I feel like you got this, like, no, you kind of like the second half, you get this sort of like Bridges of Madison County quiet kind of romance movie, which is fine.
The Bridges of Madison County.
I've never seen it. I'm trying to use a reference where it's like a very quiet kind of romance movie, you know, where like two people, like, you know, it's not like there's the scene where they all get in a big fight.
Bridges of Madison County is nonstop gun and knife fights.
Oh, really? Shit. Okay. Yeah, maybe the Horse Whisperer I'm thinking of. I don't know. Let's say the Horse Whisperer. Might be the one I'm thinking of. Something with Clint Eastwood. That's a romance movie.
Horseback knife and gun fights.
The horse are stabbing the shit out of each other in those movies. You know what? That's all horse gang warfare.
Those horses have like spiky rings.
Yeah, just stab me. It's like fucking The Outsiders, but with horses. Like, they're just like Pony Boy. Get it? The horse. Anyway, Bridge to Madison. That's what I mean. It's almost like, because it's split up that way, it's just like I know what Jubilee's arc is and how it comes full circle. And it's, you know, it's an important message, and but there's not enough time to really like go too deeply into it. But then the other side of things with the Storm story, it's kind of the same thing. I get what it is, and I get what it's doing, and it's fine. I just feel like, because these are both split into almost half episodes, it neither really has the time to give you a lot of emotional weight to get along with it, I guess. I know there's a second part to the Storm one, so we'll get more of that.
Yeah, that was going to be my response to what you just said there, sort of. It's like it is what you're saying, but
I need to judge it as what it is now. I can't judge it based on what I'm going to get later, because I don't know what that is.
Yes. I mean, the Storm thing is a half episode. We're going to get the other half. It's like, it's not even, it's like the Storm thing was like a third episode, because we're going to get a full episode to finish that story off.
Right. Yes. So, cause the Jubilee thing is about 17 and a half minutes, or about 18 minutes. Almost 17 and a half minutes of this episode. It's 10 minutes.
For me, the Jubilee thing felt like the perfect amount of time. I felt like any more of
it was fine.
Would have been overkill almost. It was just the perfect amount of referential shit to all that old stuff, and it was just amazing. And then
I think that I could have
the emotional beat with her and Bobby, like Bobby. Yeah, almost, it just didn't really work.
I think they could have got a little more if they just had like spent a little more time on some of the fun video game stuff instead of like we're seeing the video game screens of her doing it. But if we just had a little more of that, I think it would have been cool. But I mean, all in all, I really liked it.
So fun to watch.
It was a fun episode. It definitely brings you back.
It's good.
Especially since the show is like nonstop nostalgia. It's they certainly keyed that into this episode, hands down.
And the music's so good.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait. I got to get the soundtrack on vinyl.
I don't know if the only thing I found is on Apple Music, the intro is on there, but I haven't seen that there's a whole album or anything. So maybe when its season's done. Yeah, maybe. Usually that's how it goes.
Well, I look forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Though they you know, having the theme song on Apple Music is pretty fun. It's great for a gym workout playlist.
The reason I think maybe the Jubilee Bobby thing didn't land as well with the weight is I'm not 100% convinced on this Bobby voice actor yet. Like, no matter what the situation is, he always sounds the same. Yeah, he always sounds the same.
Like, I don't mind him.
Like, he's never like any more excited or any more scared or any more. It's just like his delivery is just this kind of deadpan thing so far. Except for the one scene where he starts speaking in Portuguese, and that's hilarious. She's just like, "Look, I don't speak justifiably agitated Portuguese."
Yeah, it's an echo.
That was a good line.
I feel like there's some revelations about him in this episode too, which are nice. Just kind of explain a bit more of his whole deal.
I thought for sure he was gonna bust out his powers though.
Yeah, I kind of was too in this episode. So,
at least they did give a reason for it.
He's like so worried that someone's gonna see him. Of course, there's cameras. You're in Mojo World.
But he's also like a bit of a narcissist. They're like, "What do you think? Everyone's always looking at you?" And she's like, "He's like, yes."
Yeah,
it's pretty funny.
Well, we see the X-Men having a meeting in the morning. They're having breakfast. There's some muffins and on the table.
They muffins or beignets?
They look like muffins. They're in a muffin tin, and there's three different types, but they could be beignets. I don't know the difference.
So this actually gives us a bit of a timescape of the whole series, because wasn't it? I don't remember if it was her birthday, but it was close.
Well, we said she was learning to drive in an episode where she was 16. She get her driver's license
when the series started.
Yeah,
and now we know she's just turned 18. So it's now this is 3 years.
This falls on her 18th birthday.
Yeah.
So you know, I like Magneto's new costume, although I find it kind of funny when I don't know, just the arm sleeves look funny when he's just hanging around. Like when he's not fighting, if he's just sitting at the table and like eating, like drinking, they just look kind of weird. If it was like full up and it didn't just show his shoulder and that's it, I think it would be a better design. For when he's not fighting people, but you know. Anywho.
The arm sleeves are strange anyway.
They're kind of strange.
I think it's just
because they've been reserved for female characters in designs forever. So it's weird seeing a dude have them. And I mean, that's not a great reason, but I mean, when you've seen something that way forever, it's just odd when it's different.
You wouldn't question really Storm wearing those.
Or the White Queen who does, or other characters she like does that. Wear those, you know, so it's just kind of off strange to see a dude doing it. And like, it didn't look so bad when he's like in battle, but it's kind of weird when he's just like sitting at a table drinking from an ex-mug.
Or in his Hellfire garb, because, you know, White Queen's rocking that look, and he's just, like, rocking the Hellfire kinky look, because it's, like, a kinky sex club, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So Gambit brings Rogue a coffee, but then she's like, "It's too late. Magneto already brought me one." And then he's, like, using his powers to, like, drop sugar in, like, three sugars, correct? And Magneto drops three sugars in with the spoons and stirs it around, all in front of Gambit, who's like, "Oh, if you're taking orders, I'll take a cappuccino." And he's like, "No, I'm giving them."
Thankfully, I am giving them.
Yes. Yeah. I like this little interaction. I really do hope that,
Magneto's going hard at him, though. Going hard at Gambit. Like,
yeah, because he's, and you can see, and actually you can see Rogue is worried by it all, which is interesting.
She should be.
Yeah, I mean, I want to believe that she is actually having a sexual affair with Magneto. Not affair, really, per se, because who knows? I don't know what the relationship between Gambit and her are.
I feel like she isn't, because they're making you want to think so hard that they are. It's going to be revealed that they aren't, and Gambit's suspicion. That's what I think.
I mean, they are. It's not just like if they're not just they're really trying going to be throwing us. That's going to be like if I told you every day for a year my name was Andre, and then the last day I'm like, "Oh wait, my name's Edward." I gotcha. You know, like they give like everything they're giving us is implying this as much as you can on a show like this. So,
which is why
you know,
I think they're going to pull the rug.
I think if they could show them actually having sex in the show, they would have, but they can't because it's for 14. Whatever.
We'll see which
it's
way
animated.
It
we'll see. So,
what he's actually doing is teaching her to control her power. And that's why that was legit Danger Room time. It wasn't Morph. He's in there trying to teach her to control her power. At the end of this season, Magneto will have successfully taught Rogue how to control her power, which will allow her and Gambit to have a real relationship, and Magneto will come off as super heroic.
I mean, sometimes like that. Well, you know, it's a nice theory, but I don't think it's happening.
You heard it here first, people.
All right, yeah. Well, you know, I did.
This was recorded 6 days before you heard it here first, people. That's so right. Even 6 days before that, it was heard.
Mm-hmm. Hey, buddy, come on. Can't be in the middle of the episode.
Have our babies.
Yes, Mine will thankfully just sleep on the floor between my legs, though, and not bother me too much. Not that yours bothers you.
Screaming at any moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My God, mine just left a cloud of fucking fur everywhere. Just like comes in, you pet him, he just goes. That was like an attack. Oh, you're some cute buddy, I know. All right, so they're all hanging out. Magneto wants them to be training extra hard now for the event that Sinister returns. Actually, this episode's not going to be too hard to describe to go through, I don't think. Because it's not of crazy twists and turns.
No,
just references. So Magneto wants them all to go hard, and then Beast says, well, it is Jubilee's 18th birthday. Perhaps, you know, we should celebrate kind of in his own way. And then Magneto's like, you know, and then he's like, she'll be easier. She'll continue to age if we train her properly so she doesn't die in battle, basically. He's like, which is more important.
Let's put her through intensive training in the danger room.
And then she comes in and she's all excited about her birthday and says for her birthday she wants to go to the arcade. And then,
which is awesome. I thought they were going to go because it's a video game.
That would have been nice. But then Magneto's like, and then we cut to her being upset that, you know, she can't do anything on her birthday. She's got to train because of Magneto.
And it could have been that same arcade guy. She's just like, yeah, quarter.
Yeah, we've never gotten our arcade in the show yet. He would be interesting to add in too, right?
I think we're going to get one maybe next season, Arcade's Revenge. It'll be a sequel to
I get that he's kind of close to Mojo, so maybe that's why they don't. But,
Yeah, I mean, one's just a hired assassin in the others.
Yeah, but he makes elaborate theme parks that puts you in games and stuff like that to put you through to eventually get you killed. Well, yeah, it's kind of dumb that it's like, you know, in hindsight, if you were to just like hire a hitman to go walk up behind the guy you want to kill and shoot him in the back of the head and then walk away, it's far more efficient than hiring a hitman to kidnap the guy you want to kill and then trap him on an island and then fly him to some secret island somewhere in some other side of the world and then make him run through a bunch of, you know, video game-esque carnival games until he eventually probably gets killed from, you know, not being able to win one of them. So, but, you know,
well, to be fair, that assassin with the gun you mentioned wouldn't have a very good shot against the X-Men.
Fair enough. But, you know, he's not just the hitman for the X-Men.
No.
So, so she's mad. Roberto's there hanging out in her bedroom. She just wants one day to do her thing, but, you know, because of this, she's kind of stuck, you know. Her room is crazy designed too, by the way. It's like bright pink wallpaper.
Plushie.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Long shot plushie. Yeah, she has a long shot like teddy bear.
I've noticed a lot of like, you know, the walls are pink and there's a lot of like very you know, brightly colored stuff on the walls, like posters and stuff. I do see a long shot plushie. I literally just saw it. That's funny.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that made? Did you get that from Mojo World? Speaking of which,
Longshot was noticeably
absent from this episode. And when it got to the point where there's a mysterious stranger, I thought it might have been him until I realized it was definitely a woman. So I was like,
I thought it was because I forgot about the whole abscissa thing. I thought it was maybe Dazzler because the outfit was similar to hers underneath the kind of armor.
So you have to explain that to me when we get to it from the comics because I don't know what that is. So we see her discover they mentioned they had some surprises for her earlier when she showed up. Then she discovers that in her room is a Motendo entertainment system, which I guess she didn't bother looking too closely at, to see that the name was different, with a video cartridge inside, which was going to be my.
She said she never heard of Motendo before.
Oh, so she just didn't put together that Mojo and Motendo could go together.
No, she just thought it was a surprise. Yeah.
So, maybe it's Motendo. So, you know, one of my X points was the art on the cartridge. Did you have an X point about that?
I do, yeah.
Okay, we can talk about that later then. So, it does look kind of like an SNES, kind of, or a Sega kind of mix. So,
like a cross between the. It actually looks more like a Japanese Famicom.
Oh, yeah, it does kind of, yeah. You know, Roberto is kind of surprised that she's really into video gaming. He doesn't see it's not really his thing. But as she goes to turn it on, like circuitry comes out of it.
Make or break. So like clearly they are dating. Cause he's,
he does say this could be make or break. We do see that as a
teenage kid in the 90s is all like, you play video games,
a rich one that could probably fly wherever he wants in the world to do what he wants. So,
buy more video games.
all these tendrils come out of the we know it's a 16-bit system, says on the top, but that gets opened up and a bunch of tendrils come out, grab them, force them down in the bed, and essentially, as you can see, take over their minds, which you can see starts happening to Roberto, and then Jubilee, her eyes turn white, and then they wake up. And we do get a fun dial-up noise as they log in, which is a nice throwback to the 90s as well.
The sound effects are fantastic.
Fun story. When I was just out of college, I had a apartment, and I needed roommates, so I put an ad out. And then
David Cutler.
That came a little later, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I knew him before we lived together. So these two girls that were best friends in high school moved in together. It was a nightmare because they became bitter enemies very quickly. But they came into the house, and one of the girls didn't want to pay for the internet. She wanted to use her parents' internet, so she would use dial-up. And then I got my phone bill, which was long distance to Port Hawkesbury from Truro, and it was like $400 or $500 because she was using dial-up every time she used the internet for hours and tying up the phone lines. So she got on the internet after that, thank God. But
it was a special time in
it was it human was
species.
I wonder what ever happened to Megan. Anywho, it became a nightmare pretty quickly. Her and her friend, like, her friend got a new boyfriend, and then she didn't like the friend's boyfriend, and she didn't want him coming in the house, and then it became a huge thing. And I'm just like in the middle of it while they're like hiding pots and toilet paper in each other's room so nobody can use the other one can't use it. Oh yeah, it was fucking gong show.
You lived in a sitcom and not a good
essentially life. Yeah. So they wake up in the bedroom, but then they realize that something's amiss as the walls are kind of CGI. A miss
and a foot.
Yes, that's true. But they're kind of glitchy, and then a hand busts through the wall, and they're attacked by a sentinel, and then they see a city in front of them, realizing that things are a little off. They shoot at the sentinel. They get in a fight with the city.
It's funny because we forgot something.
What?
Previously on X-Men. Oh,
yeah. You actually have it. I didn't think you would.
Yeah.
What I wouldn't give if someone could just make it rain.
Speak plainly. Who are you?
Take care, Jean. Call me Madeline Pryor. Farewell, Madeline. Farewell.
Farewell. Now it's funny because the hand comes through and grabs them, and then Jubilee shoots the sentinel, and then she falls like in a cool superhero pose. We're way before that. This is pretty great.
Music is so good.
I just wanted it in my
ear holes.
It's in there, man. So the funny part is, like, when she falls from the sentinel, she lands in a cool superhero pose, and Roberto just falls flat against the car. Yeah, which, like, he hasn't got his training yet or know anything about it, so he just, like, hits the roof of the car and then falls off. Then he's checking his appearance in, like, the mirror. So you can tell he is vain. But they continue to be attacked by the sentinel as they're running away. They eventually find a phone booth, which they think might be a trap, but he makes a note that it'd be a really novel trap if it was. They try to use it and then teleport to what appears to be Genosha. Back when Jubilee was there in the previous episode, when she was being slave labored into building the work there. And we see some fun nods to the old characters that were also there. Also, there's the guards there look very much like Boba Fett from a distance.
Oh, yeah,
Did you notice that? Yeah. No. Like, I don't remember them looking that way in the original series. Maybe they did, but from a distance.
No, they have those green sort of masks with the red visors in the
open. Yeah, but like this, it's black in the front, so it kind of looks very much like the Mandalorian helmet. Though we see like Sunfire, we see Blob, we see Domino working there as well. Also in the foreground, you don't really see him, but you see a Thunderbird pushing a block or something too. So,
I didn't notice them.
Oh yeah, in the foreground when they're talking, you see someone in the foreground pushing a block, but you don't really see their head or anything. You just see their costume. It's definitely Thunderbird's costume.
Okay, Warpath.
Or Warpath's costume. Why do I always mix those two up? So wait, yeah, but which one is the one that just came back? It's Thunderbird, isn't it?
Thunderbird just came back, yeah.
So yeah, it could be Thunderbird. Why couldn't it be Thunderbird?
I mean, I guess it could be, but it's like they have a slightly different uniform, and I'm pretty sure that's Warpath. And especially since the one that they had designed for that, who was in the intro, was Warpath, so it's probably Warpath because they had him designed for the show, not Thunderbird. Well, they did say Thunderbird. Because they did say Thunderbird was going to be in the original show, but
yeah.
It didn't. That didn't get to the design phase, I don't think.
Well, I mean, why would they put Warpath in on Thunderbird?
Oh, maybe it did. Okay. Yeah, well, it could be either then.
So it's a fun little nod. Maybe he'll join the show eventually. So, you know, that she's kind of like talking. She was talking earlier about how she doesn't want things to change. You know, she wants to kind of like, it's very, this episode theme is very much nostalgia and how it's kind of a trap. It can bring you nice memories, but it stops you from moving on or living your life or growing as a person if you're really trapped in the past.
Or it can keep you enjoying 16-bit video games.
Okay, Devin. Devin sees where I'm going with this. No, I'm not trying to use it. There's nothing wrong with a bit of nostalgia, but if it's all you have, then obviously it's a problem. Obviously, we're on a podcast where we're talking about a cartoon show from the 90s when we were kids. Not.
This is modern stuff now.
Yes, which is continuing the story that started in the 90s, which even more deeply goes down this nostalgia hole because obviously there's money to be made with it if Disney is willing to pick the story up again and keep it going, right? So, come on, buddy. All right. So anyway, they run from the guards who start attacking them, and then this episode reminds me very much of one of my favorite movies, which I know you discussed on your other podcast, Evan. Stay Tuned.
Stay Tuned.
One of my favorite movies. One I showed my friends right away when they figured out they hadn't seen it.
Love it. Used to rent it all the time, and then it came on TMN, and I just watched it on repeat there.
I think I had it recorded on VHS from somewhere. I bought the Blu-ray though now, so. Anyway, as they're running, they see a mysterious figure that looks kind of cyberpunky off in the distance watching them. But then they have to run away, but there's like a block so they can't actually go up to them. But then they're approached by Mojo, who looks like he's lost a lot of weight. He's quite skinny, but kind of saggy because he's lost all this weight. I'm guessing like his ratings are what make him big. It's kind of what's implied in this.
Really?
I'm guessing, because when they start coming up again, he gets fat again. Or was
That's just him in the video game. That was him as a boss in the
video game. Oh, I see. So he's trying to give himself a makeover.
Yeah. No, he was getting nips and tucks. He's totally that, like, Hollywood executive who just, like...
But when we see him later, he's all fat. Character.
Yeah, because that's in the video game.
No, it's not, because you see him banging on the... banging it, like, when things aren't going wrong in the real world, you see him banging on the panel. And Spyro, like in Young and Spyro and stuff. And he's fat then.
Huh. Okay, then. Interesting. I didn't catch that. But here's it, like emaciated, like loose skin.
Mojo is kind of more disturbing looking than the regular one, eh?
Yeah, I think so.
He also has a new voice actor this time around. Yeah. Which you can tell.
Might be in the next point later.
You see, he sounds a lot less like Beastly like than he did before. So we see that Mojo is, the ratings have been in a slump. He's wanting to bring them back. In doing so, he brought Jubilee in through the video game. And if he also has some, says that, they're saying, what if we don't get, like, participate? Because it's obviously just a video game. And then he says, well, then, you know, not to say anything dramatic, like if you lose in the real life, you'll die. But, you know, vibe? Or it's very modern speaking, kind of the way he says it. But steaks. He says, but steaks.
Oh, yeah. He says, but
that's right.
Steaks. Yeah.
So, and he refers to himself as a psycho interdimensional TV executive, which is nice, which is a fun way to nod it. So, he mentions that anytime the X-Men have been in the show, you know, it's always been a big deal, but Jubilee's the star this time. Based off her memories.
Mention your name is Montendo Enter Andre System. I don't know if I mentioned
that. I don't think you did. I was pretty happy with the cleverness of that myself. So and all the
bad. Is it supposed to be Motendo though?
Oh, Montendo. Oh yeah, it is supposed to be Motendo. Oh no.
Yeah,
that is an error. An error.
Motendo Enter Andre System.
Yeah, that's right. Because there aren't that many characters I could make my name fit into this time.
Yeah. They don't actually call her Abscissa in this, but
that's no, they don't. But I didn't know that, so I don't even know what her name was, or that this was an existing character in X-Men comics before. Yeah. I just assumed it was made for this episode. Nope. So he mentions he had some nip tucks and whatever, but he also says that the game itself is all based on her memories. So she's essentially fighting through her own like nostalgia memories and all that stuff. Replaying and reliving all of these memories over and over again, which is kind of what she was like maligning she couldn't do in the real world.
Yeah. When she lands in Genosha, she's like, hey, Genosha, but like, back in the day, Genosha.
Yeah.
Because they mentioned they're trying to get into the, like, maybe getting into the UN at this point in the story.
So they also show, like, some of the shows when they're talking about her memory, some of the shows will be based upon them. One of them is the Summers Gray Divorce Court, which is a fun little thing.
I thought that was funny.
Maybe it's a nod to where we're going with the series. Who knows? Maybe they don't come back from the Madeline Pryor thing. Who knows?
Could be.
But anyway, we see her. We see all the crowds getting into it. We see the games called X-Men: The Rise of Jubilee. And it says copyright 97 Motendo Games at the bottom, which is a nice little nod. But then we see her basically fighting with. I like that they're in a game. It's all done animated to look like they're in a 16-bit video game. And whenever they show the screens of what they look like, there's like Jubilee, who's like all heroic, and then like Roberto, who's like, he always looks really scared or like trying to hide in his pictures.
Sometimes very specific video games. Like this is the character select screen from the original X-Men, the arcade game.
Correct.
And when they do their side scrolling, that's what.
It kind of reminds me a little like the gameplay of it reminds me a little more of Turtles in Time. But it is similar, very similar to that 90.
It's because the animation seems a little more Turtles in Time.
Well, maybe so. Oh, okay. I do see the moment here. Yeah, so I think that is what happened because I knew I wasn't crazy. So he's all kind of skinny and stuff. And then once everyone starts getting Mojo is in the chair watching, and as the crowd is getting up more uproarious watching the games, he goes, and he turns fat again. So, yeah, there's like energy coming off him and stuff, and he turns fat again.
I missed that.
It was just, it's a minute, around the 10-minute mark, if you're wondering.
I'm going to watch this episode.
So then we see...
We had such a quick turnaround. I'm going to watch it 10 more times.
That is true. I watched this more as well. But we see her fighting, we're not actually seeing... We're just seeing video game images of her fighting, which is a really fun nod to like the old video games. We see her fighting Sentinels. We see her in the Savage Land on boats. We see them fighting Sauron and dinosaur people.
Ooh, my favorite level, like at the end.
And we see them getting damaged and hurt, you know, and then we see the screen get taken over by the person's face that we saw before, the masked face. Mm-hmm. And Mojo's like, somebody's interfering with the game. Get her out of there. No. She's yelling. He's yelling at Spiral.
Spiral.
Who's controlling things from behind as before. Mm-hmm. But we do while they're going in between games, we get some character development with Roberto, who is saying how when he realized he's a mutant, his parents don't know, which is part of his scaredness to show his powers. Mm-hmm. And also when his mom was like talking about mutants on TV and how she was scared of them, he just didn't know how to respond and said they're all freaks and kind of trapped him in this lie now that he can't get out of.
But didn't he say that his parents were cool with it? Like they were cool with mutants, and he was like caught playing this like I hate mutants thing to like take the heat off himself.
He said, "Mom said they were good ones, but I could tell she was spooked." Yeah, yeah. He said, "So like you know, they're still uncertain about it." Yeah. So then we get it looks like the control room on Asteroid M is where they're at, and when he's talking about how you got to get out of. He's talking Jubilee that she has to get out of nostalgia, that line you played earlier, where you can't be stuck in it. You have to grow and move on. And then just he said the real world's going to hit you like a ton of bricks, basically. And then something hits him and he goes flying into a wall. And it says game over for him right away. He's like lying on the ground. He's all glitched out like he's about to die. But then Jubilee has to fight Magneto. I was really hoping during this scene, because this is very much the end of that video game we played on the show, that he would say the line. You think that he would say the line that you love, the die?
I was welcome to die.
Kind of waiting for them to do something like that, but they didn't.
I still want that T-shirt, X-Men, welcome to die.
I feel like that one's really obscure. Like I know obscure is okay.
X-Men fans are obscure. Don't worry about
that's fair. So we get class
battle time, baby.
I am Magneto.
Yeah, the voice work on that is great. We have it's nice to see the classic Magneto costume in the new designs, which we haven't before. So Jubilee talks about how he's a boss, and she just has to figure out what his pattern is. Then she, you know, capitalized on that to beat him. Mm-hmm. But to defeat him,
possibly too late for Roberto.
Yes, you see that his game is almost over, but then she finds an extra life underneath a broken panel, which is the X-Men symbol. It's green. She puts it on him and brings him back. Somebody left it there before Mojo yells at
life. How did that get in there?
I do still like this new Mojo. It's different, but they actually...
No, I like it too. It's less cartoony. It's better.
Yeah.
It's more like a slimy executive, which I like better than just a cartoon character, which, I mean, essentially he kind of is, but, you know, it's nice having him be a little more serious.
He just seemed to be on a little more cocaine in the old...
Yeah, just a hair more cocaine. So Jubilee used it to bring Roberto back. Mojo's upset because he thought they took this out of the game. Spiral doesn't know how it's still in there. Basically, she is...
Or does she? Like, we'll talk about that later. Anyway.
Possibly so. But then they're confronted on another big boss battle screen where the next thing's coming, where she's confronted with this mysterious character that seems to have been helping her throughout the game. We find out it is that they had made digital versions of her to put into the game to game test before they brought in the real Jubilee. And this is the last one that survived.
Test a game before launch, so Mojo needed beta testers.
And she says how she survived, but she managed to get her programming out of the game server and into the test server and into the main game and help Jubilee along the way. And she said she's been doing this for a very long time because of the way video games work. And then we see who she really is, which is an older version of Jubilee.
Absolutely.
So what is this from in the books?
Well, you know how Mojo creates people. Like, he created Longshot. Like, Longshot's just like a creation. Well, he created a Jubilee as well. Abscissa.
And she looks like this in the comic?
Sort of. A little more like zombified.
Oh, okay. Well, I think she no longer exists after this episode, but...
Yeah. So I guess maybe we won't see any more Allison Court. But maybe, who knows?
Right, so that was Allison Court who did her voice.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the programmed Jubilee was the original Jubilee. Yeah, I thought that was really neat. I didn't really realize that. I knew there's something different about her, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And of course, that was it.
She's older too, so an older sounding voice, even sort of. So she sounded the same to me. Like, anyway,
I like. And well, the girl does her voice now is pretty close.
Commercial during a video.
It would have been nice to do that, if this was a network television show that actually had commercials just before a commercial. You know, that would have been nice. Yeah, well, the girl does her voice now is quite a good job. Like, they're very similar. So the older Jubilee. But the older Jubilee explains the importance of not being lost in nostalgia, and that you need to grow beyond it. You can enjoy whatever, but you need to learn to grow. Otherwise, you'll miss out on actually growing up and making friends. That's all the hard stuff that comes with real life that nostalgia doesn't offer, but it's an important part of living. So learning a valuable lesson. They're suddenly distracted by Mojo, who's had enough, who puts himself into the game to fight them. And they have a big old boss battle with Mojo, to which they defeat him altogether. We see Roberto use some of his powers, but he doesn't fully turn all blacked out like he does in the comics yet, which I'm sure we'll get as a big surprise.
Two Jubilees, cheaters.
Cheaters.
Congrats may have canceled me today, but I swear... I'll cut you in the reboot.
So we see him get, after he used to be in the game in real life, he's like all knocked out. And then we see Spiral knock him over, like out of the way, and smile. So, you know, this could have been part of her plan. But I thought we revealed before that the last season, it seemed like their relationship was done, but apparently they must have got it back together. So anyway,
smart. He's too drug-addled, I think.
Friends, and by friends, I mean you. Broadcast servers to buy us some time. Zip it to Costa.
That's where they realized they were the same person.
Zip it to Costa.
Yeah, right. And they turn. Yeah. So yeah, basically, then you know, Roberto and Jubilee share a kiss, which is nice, and then you know they learn something.
KISSING.
She says, you know, she could have lost him in the game. And he says, talk about risk. And then she kisses him because, you know, no time like the present.
What do you say we destroy Mojo's game and get you two lovebirds out of here?
Get those lovebirds out of there.
And that ends the first part of this episode and brings us into Life Death Part 1, in which we see Storm now living on a quiet farm somewhere in the Arizona desert, I'm guessing, based on the landscape. And I believe they do reference that they're somewhere in Arizona with... Forge. They have a lot of quiet Forge little moments.
Forge, I think, lives in Texas, actually.
I thought he called it Arizona.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a nice place. He's got solar panels on the roof, which is funny because that wasn't a big thing in the 90s.
Well, Forge better have solar panels.
That's true, and it could be a nod to the fact that he can create anything he can think of, right? So if if he thought about using the sun to power his house, then solar panels become a thing. But if they were just
had him scrolling on an iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. He's got that's a nice way to incorporate modern technology into some of these episodes if they wanted to.
Yeah, it's true. Forge just did it.
So Forge calls Storm down for dinner, and they have a nice conversation where she asks where his hand is. He has a robotic hand, how that happened. He said he was a soldier, and, you know, he lost it. There's a war. There's some good dialogue. There's some really nice, like, the dialogue is good here.
See, that's why I'm surprised. Andre messages me. He's just like, this Storm stuff's pretty dry. And then I said, the edge of my seat the whole time. I thought,
calm down. I knew you were going to do this. Anytime anybody says anything again, no, because anybody says anything that's against Storm, you become super defensive. You become super defensive, and then you just everything becomes a black and white subject. I said it's a little dry. I said a little dry. I didn't say it was garbage or it was terrible or I hated it. I said it was a little dry. Was my word.
I was legit shocked when this happened.
You meant
this one.
Look, I'll say it once, just once. Then you can go or you can stay, but. I love you.
Which I mean, we've seen them together for less like 8 minutes, and this hit. That's what I mean. Then this hits. It's like I know they spent time together, but it just felt unearned because we haven't had a full episode of showing all this stuff or a bunch of montages or anything. Yeah. But anyway, he explains that you know he's an old friend of Charles. He wants to help her get her powers back. And then, you know, she's having trouble doing that, but they're going through tests to try to make it happen. They go on horse rides together and they connect. So there's a lot of nice moments of them, you know, getting together. We also see on his wall, he has some pictures, including one of him with X Factor, which is very cool. And the new designs and all of them, like with the new art style, looks really nice. We also see he has a robot leg because he's wearing jean shorts and on a beach somewhere. And some other things she notices on the wall. So the nod to X Factor is really fun. I hope we get more of that or more of that team later. We also see very briefly, and maybe I'll say this for next point. I'll say it now, but it's one of my X points for later. It's on the bottom of the screen. You see him in a military outfit, like what some of a soldier would wear during a party or something. And he's got his arm. Bastion has his arms around him.
Bastion.
Yeah.
Or Sebastian Shaw, do you mean?
Bastion.
Or do you mean
the Bastion? The guy with the circle designs on his chest, right?
Or do you mean Madrox?
No, it's Madrox the Mothman Man.
Oh, you mean the bad guy, Bastion.
The bad guy, Bastion, yeah. The guy, he had black costume, and he had, like, ovals, like, pink here, and here. They get smaller, right? That's Bastion, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's him. So we see Bastion with his arm around him. Let me make sure it's Bastion X-Men. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's him. It's definitely Bastion.
Okay.
So, you can pause.
A time traveler.
It's just on the edge of the screen. You see it just when they're going over some of the pictures on the wall. You see it right in the bottom corner. So there's not a lot to say about this. That we see them reconnecting, like we see them falling, I guess, like falling for each other, kind of. And the reason she slapped him when he said that was because before that he revealed that he had a hand in creating the collars. They said that a woman in Scotland had created them, but they used
Moira.
But they'd used his technology that he traded for the government's help with making his hand and his leg to
should be super pissed at Moira.
So because of that, you know, he had a hand in causing the technology that created her problem. And that's why she was so upset. But anyway,
that's just how it goes in life, death as well.
Yes. Oh, is it okay? Yeah. Well, you guys said that when you were talking about what's to come, basically.
Yeah. It was Dave Cutler's recommendation there the other day.
Yeah, and he's 100% right
tonight, but definitely go read Life Death.
So during this, she's trying to use her powers, and they're still not having reactivated. But while this is happening, she kind of falls through the floor, and then back into the she has like a dream sort of scenario thing where she's riding the horse in a rainstorm, and she sees these big red eyes that are watching her. She sort of falls through the floor back into the cabin, and then is attacked. Her and Forge are attacked by a demon monster thing, which looks like an owl creature, as you see there. Pretty cool design on this thing. Looks really neat.
The Adversary.
Yeah, is that, was that his name in the comics?
Yeah.
Okay. And who is he in the comics?
I'll talk about that in the next point.
So I love how there's this giant owl demon creature that just shows up at Forge, just like, get out of my home. Like,
get out of my house.
Like, that's going to work.
Did I clip that?
Oh, no, so he's like, oh, sorry. I didn't know this was your house. I'll leave. And then the demon leaves.
You meant to make me a goddess. Instead, you have fashioned a fool.
Great dialogue.
Which fantastic.
I was on the edge of my seat, not because it was Storm, but because it was just great character stuff. And I feel like that's like, the first two episodes were just nonstop action, and I don't want us to get too addicted to that.
No, and I agree, and it's nothing to do with that. When we were talking, I said it wasn't exciting, but I didn't mean it for it to be exciting. It wasn't very interesting either to me, because it's just two people falling in love, and that's fine. But
it was less about that and more about Storm's journey to get her powers back, and some backstory of Forge.
It was a lot of them riding horses and looking into each other's eyes on these nice messes where the sunset's happening. So, you know. But anyway, Forge gets attacked by the thing. It bites him on the shoulder, and we see it seemingly infect him with something and throw him aside.
Yeah.
And then it confronts Storm, and Storm is like left with no powers to fight this thing.
Yeah.
And then he says, you know, he feeds off. What does he feed off? So I don't waste my meal.
Yeah, what was it?
He said, you're disappointed, you're trapped, you're haunted.
Yeah.
In despair. Is this guy, it'd be cool if this guy was despair. You know, but anyway, the it's an obscure Marvel villain that we don't see very often.
Yeah, it's true.
So anyway, he says he's not gonna waste
a Y.
So he feeds off her despair, and he's not gonna waste his meal. So end of episode. A big cliffhanger.
Yeah, I think I got that last.
It's a good line.
Trapped here, haunted, suffering, despairing. I feast on misery, and I, the adversary, shall not waste my meal.
I don't know who did the voice acting for Adversary, but for a couple seconds, it almost sounds like Allison Seely Smith. I don't know if she's doing that voice as well, but it's very good. Just for a couple words, it sounds.
There are some people that are credited on IMDb as additional voices, but not, there's nobody that's labeled as the Adversary.
Okay, so I wonder if it's her.
I mean, there's like a bunch of actors that could be here. So.
Okay. Well, interesting to find out because it's really good. That was creepy.
Mm-hmm. Very well done.
Yeah, end of episode. So that brings us to.
Each of us will have to look into his own heart and decide.
I can go first. This is another 10 for me. I really like this one. The video game part was everything I wanted to be. And like, I didn't need that part to have weight because I'm okay with taking these two half stories kind of. I wouldn't quite call them that, but as a whole.
Well, one's a full story, one's a part of another story.
Yeah, exactly. But like as a whole, it kind of has everything for me. Love that Storm stuff. This horse thing too. Like she almost went off that cliff. He wasn't gonna tell her. I'm like, dude, that was kind of crazy.
I might be trying to test her to shock her powers back. Fly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 9. I'll give it a 9. I liked it, but it's not as good as previous episodes for sure. I almost gave it an 8, but I did really like it. So you know, the Jubilee stuff's really fun, and I do like the Storm stuff. Like I said, it feels like the Jubilee thing should have been a full episode, and the Storm thing should have been a full episode. You know, it feels a little shoehorned because like I feel like we would have got a lot more cool video game stuff if this wasn't half episode. I don't know why they did it this way. There's probably some reason the studio did it this way that we'll never know. But I just feel like
it's either they didn't have enough story for that video game stuff to feel like they warranted the full episode, or the opposite, they have too much story for the life death story and felt it couldn't fit into one.
But that's possible. The thing about
that is. Your problem with that is it didn't show enough of the building of the relationship between Storm and Forge.
Well, this it's first everything part
probably really. Just should have been that. And at the very end, I guess that's what it was. And at the very end, they meet the adversary. So I guess that is kind of how they should do it. And then the next episode is.
I just feel like they could have spent. I feel like if you had more time, you could have like really built that up into something that meant more than just kind of thrown at us. But it's cool. Like I said, I like it. An 8 or a 9 is pretty fucking respectable, dude. I don't think we're gonna get anything below that in this season based on what I'm seeing, but we'll see.
This is probably my third favorite episode so far. I liked it better than the last one.
It's definitely my least favorite episode, but I still really like it. Yes, it's very good.
Great stuff. All right.
It's very, very good. To our
X points. Uncanny X points. All right, let's get into it here. You want to go first?
Sure. I'm going to use the cartridge. So the video game cartridge for the Nintendo Motendo system does look like the game, the classic Sega game from the 90s. The artwork is very similar.
Or, no, I see. I don't think it is. I think it's Mutant Apocalypse. Look at the cover to Mutant Apocalypse.
Oh, well, it's reminiscent of one of those. I thought it was the one that we had played.
I thought so too, but then it has Apocalypse up in the corner, and I didn't think I have that game. I can run upstairs and check.
It says, well, what I've read online is it says the Nintendo game is designed after the Sega Genesis Mega Drive game.
Okay.
So it was used artwork similar to the 93 X-Men game for the Genesis.
Yeah, see, I have that image here because I have that game upstairs, and
it has
the Wolverine jumping out just like the Sega one. But I wonder what Mutant Apocalypse looks like.
The Sega Genesis Mega Drive is what the system was based on too. In a room.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay, it's sort of like a combination of the two games, actually. Well,
yeah, because it did have Sinister in the corner there.
If you look at Mutant Apocalypse, it's very similar. I'm gonna bring
it's what's on the actual disc, not the box, right? What was on the cartridge or the case?
Yeah, I was looking at the cartridge.
All right.
One second there. Oh my god, this baby. Baby, you're a lot of work when you're trying to podcast at the same time. I mean, you're a lot of work a lot of the time there, little baby.
Yeah, it's got Wolverine jumping towards the screen, and it's got it's similar.
I'm bringing them both up, but I looked at it. My initial reaction was that it was the Sega one.
Well, it could be. And
then I saw the...
The internet has been wrong before.
And it made me think that it's Mutant Apocalypse. Because the image of Apocalypse is exactly the same. So it's like it looks like this, like with the Wolverine jumping towards the screen from the Sega one. But that's the exact Apocalypse image up in the corner, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it seems to be a combination of both games.
Well, it could be. The actor... Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'll say this for my next point.
Oh, my next point. Well, I can talk about the adversary, I suppose. So the adversary, was because Forge has kind of shamanistic powers in the comics as well.
So Shaman
he
calls boy.
Upon like a he in the Vietnam War in the comics his. Entire platoon was getting slaughtered or did get slaughtered, and to get revenge on the North Viet Cong army or whatever, he calls forth the adversary demon who does do what Forge wants him to do, but then you know it just like haunts Forge again and again after that sort of thing. Like, so it's like it doesn't leave your presence forever once you call it, you know what I mean? You're sort of like connected to it.
Interesting.
So that's the adversary. And, you know, it even shows up in the Fear Itself storyline briefly. So it showed up a few times.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yep. So one of my next X point is one of the voice actors that is listed as additional actors is Robin Atkin Downes, Downes. Okay. I'm guessing he is the voice of the adversary specifically because of his previous work.
I thought it was a woman. Interesting.
No, his voice sounded like a dude to me.
Okay.
But he did the voice of Doomsday in the Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice movie. He did the voice of the Master in Guillermo del Toro's The Strain. He did he's on Criminal Minds, the Orville, playing like a nefarious alien character and some other things. So he's got a deep kind of gravelly voice. So I'm guessing he was probably the adversary, but that's purely conjecture. But it seems as though he might most likely be the obvious choice because the rest seemed either too old or they were the wrong gender, I think.
Okay, well, my next X point is Jubilee's earrings. Did you happen to notice them?
They say Jubilee on them? The big pink round ones?
Yeah, who has like earrings with their own name on them. It's very well, funny. You know. Jubilee.
I mean, her name is actually Jubilation Lee, so, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty technically great. Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great name. It's also kind of an odd choice for a hero name. Like, Jubilee is kind of a, you know, I know, like, it's fun when you say it's Jubilation Lee, and then it's is Jubilation, like, a real name?
Well, I don't know about a name. It's a real word, but...
Oh, I know it's a word.
That was her nickname anyway. She went by Jubilee anyway. It's not like an X-Men name.
Yes, for sure. But it's just, you know, maybe her parents named her that specific. Was she adopted? Wasn't that her whole thing?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, it is apparently a boy, a girl name, according to the Baby Center database for names. It's a Hebrew name. It means ram's horn. Oh, that's what Jubilee means, the word Jubilee. My point was going to be the music, the 16-bit use of the theme song and doing all that sort of stuff and playing it in with the whole episode was really, really fun.
It was so good.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent.
Walking into an arcade in the 90s, it was freak, because the music was always great in the arcade. You walk into the arcade and it was just popping with all these different music from all the different games. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's my third point.
Oh, my next point is Allison Court passing the torch. Like, it was kind of like a passing the torch. It was kind of nice to see that, like the older Jubilee character sort of like, because there was a bit of a passing the torch of skill in the episode where she's like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. So Jubilee learned some things there, and she'll be a more badass fighter after this, likely. Though she was pretty badass against Magneto in this. So yeah, that was cool, though it just gives you a slight hint of missing Allison Court in the role, because, like, I don't know if it's nostalgia talking or just the fact that she was such a big part of our childhoods. Like, she was like Lydia Deetz and Jubilee, and like, she has
the big comfy couch.
Yeah, and I didn't watch that, but she was a very unique voice actor. So I feel like, you know, I don't know why she gave up acting, but she was so good at it. She could have just kept doing that forever.
Well, it's not always the actor's fault or reasoning as to why they quit acting. If they're not getting hired, then...
Yeah, true enough.
Well, you know, the Canadian
but it's all good. They passed the torch, and it was a nice moment. Yeah.
Also, like, this is just my next point, is that Jubilee's powers seem to be way more stronger than they ever were before. Because, like, when you're seeing...
She's training.
Assuming that the... Well, it's also years have gone by. But assuming that the characters she's fighting in the game are reminiscently as powerful as the characters in real life...
Oh, I don't think we should assume that at all.
Okay, because she's just like...
one-hit KO'd Magneto.
She's like one-hit KO and like, Sentinels left and right, and Sauron and all these other characters. So, like...
Make sense by her video game logic. Video games, you have to hit the villain 3 times.
Yes, that's right. They have to flash three times.
She just hit him once.
So. Yes. But she used a big, crazy, powerful move.
It was a good one. Crazy kick. It was a cool use of her powers. Like, just this crazy punch kick. Yeah. So what X point are we on now? Was that your fourth one?
That was my fourth one.
Okay. Dazzler's gig. Be interesting to... I wonder if they're going to come back to that. If she's like, we'll see what that gig was. Like, because they mentioned that Dazzler's has a gig, and that's why she's not there.
Wait, who mentioned that?
Mojo, I think.
Oh, so Dazzler's still in the Mojo world?
She's off being a rock star.
But she's from the real world first off, right?
Yeah, she's...
I don't think we saw Dazzler in the Mojo world the previous show, did we?
Yeah,
am I forgetting something?
The episode long shot leaves with Dazzler on one arm and Spiral on the other.
Right. Okay. So yeah, there's still some, but where's long shot? That's what I want to know.
That's a good question.
All right. My last point was going to be I'll merge two together. I love the horror elements of this one. It'd be like, I love whenever shows delve into horror stuff, because I like horror stuff. But like the ones that this towards the end of the show are really good. Like the adversary looks really interesting. Is that how he looks in the comics?
Or does he take different forms? Stuff on the full story if he does the owl thing. But normally it's like kind of this feathered sort of like
Yeah, he looks super cool. Looking. And I like the voice work of a Forgeon in this. He's really good as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my last one would be the voice actor for Mojo. The voice actor for Mojo.
Oh, I can tell you that.
This time, what?
I can tell you what that guy's name is. He's just right here.
Oh, I can't too. You got it there?
Yep. It's David Erigo Jr. Erigo? E-R-I-G-O.
Yep.
He does a lot of work on Phineas and Ferb in the new Looney Tunes Looniversity show. A lot of animated work, mostly. Not originally, just the new one. He also does some voices on the Spider-Man 2 video game, which I was talking about in our last episode, which I really like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It just has additional voices.
About the Spider-Man 2 video.
They're really good, Spider-Man dude. You claim to love Spider-Man. And you have not played this game yet?
I played some of the first one.
They're so. How could you play some of it and not beat it? I platinum both. They're so good.
New video games are just too much. They're just too much for me. I don't find it fun. It's just too much.
You can't handle it. It's like jazz.
Yeah, maybe.
I sent Davin a clip from the. I sent Davin a clip from the Mighty Boosh. I don't know if you're familiar with that TV show, but it's when this one guy's complaining the other guy about how he's always talking about jazz. All that, and I like jazz music, so I'm. This is just joking.
You don't hate jazz.
I love jazz. Yeah, what he says, like he's like, you fear jazz. It plays inside of the rules. It plays inside of the lines. Yeah. He's doing this whole thing,
that's why people don't like jazz.
And then what is it? What is Noel Felix says to him? Jazz is for what is it? Jazz is only for math teachers and like the mentally deficient or something like that. that was really funny.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's good. But because Davin's always talking about jazz and on the movie podcast, and I just made me think of him when I saw that clip.
All right. Well, let's move on to a segment that Andre would certainly miss if we didn't do.
Oh, so it's not good because I didn't pick one.
Oh.
I got it.
Actually, let's do this
first. Hey. No, I got it.
Check this out.
Well, we're doing this first anyway.
Okay.
So rather than suggest life, death, which is the obvious choice,
which is the obvious choice,
the route I normally take, that's been done on this show.
It's been done.
Oh my God, who's knocking on the door? What's going on there? Anyway,
on your outside door.
Yeah.
All right, I can talk about my comic if you want to go answer.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
All right, so. My choice for a comic is, and I don't think I talked about it before, I had a pick selected, but then Davin, I think when we were doing the movies, I had selected for one of those and we weren't really doing them for the movie, so I didn't bring it out. But it was the original comic for Road to Perdition that the movie was based on. I really like the movie, but the comic by Max Allen Collins is insanely good.
Is it also called Road to Perdition?
It is. Just a done in one graphic novel. The only thing about the comic is it doesn't have the Jude Law character, who is very disturbing in the movie and I really liked. But as far as like a real, really well done crime comic that sets up, you know, all the same similar stories that come with the book or with the movie. And I think the movie is an underappreciated gem. Tom Hanks is very good in it. People just don't like to see him play a more serious or dark character, but he's super good in it, in that role. It's a very good movie. But yeah, check out the graphic novel, Road to Perdition. There's also a sequel about, I think, like the son of the kid. Because in the comic, the kid becomes like a priest and he's telling a story about his childhood. And I think the sequel, he has like his son goes through something and comes back around. But yeah, check that out. The Road to Perdition.
Well, I'm going to suggest Uncanny X-Men 220 to 224. Here's the cover to 220.
Ooh.
This is where Storm fights the adversary. The adversary is not...
Is that him there? Is that Forge? Yeah, that's Forge.
That's Forge, but it's not Forge. Yeah. It's actually...
Zombie Forge.
The adversary, I think.
Zomborge.
But, you know, it's a... So that's... Go check that out.
Is it Zomborge?
Snake. You know, it's all kinds of crazy stuff she has to deal with this adversary character. Then it ends in this one. Little long shot cover there. That's a good one. But, yeah. Right before the Fall of Mutants.
I got a lot of X-Men reading to do, man. Now I got that app.
X-Men.
Yeah, I know. I'm probably just gonna bring books with me when I go on my trip because I don't want to. I guess people are watching this already, mostly back. But just because I don't have like my iPad on the beach, you know, like get sand in or something. I do want to catch up on all of this old stuff as time goes on. So once I finish my run of Spider-Man 2099, the Peter David run. Did you ever like read something in a comic you distinctly remember as a kid and thinking it was very disturbing or like odd or different, and then like going to it later or as an adult and saying, oh, I'll understand it now as time goes on. And then I read a part, because in Spider-Man 2099, when he fights the Vulture from 2099, who was revealed to be like a cannibal and a real lunatic, Spider-Man at one point in the comics, he webs him up and he goes, now I just like, and he's knocked out and he's fallen into a web and he's starting to rip through it. And he's like, now I just got to web him up and leave him for the police. And then it starts to break away. And then you see Vulture start falling. He says, before he becomes a greasy smear in the pavement. And then you see the guy start falling. And then Spider-Man put his hand out and then put it away and not do anything. And then you're like, oh, wait, so he just let him die. And then as a kid, I remember thinking, is that what happened? Surely that's not what happened. And then when I was rereading it, I was like, oh, no, that's what happened. Like, that's 100% what happened. But I just didn't realize it until, you know, that, because to me, comic heroes always did good stuff. I've never seen someone kill. So even the Punisher, I guess, was different. But, you know, like Spider-Man, even this version of Spider-Man letting someone fall to their death seemed wrong.
Well, speaking of Punisher, sort of along those lines, I do remember one comic that, to me, when I was a kid, I remember it being really disturbing and kind of, you know, horror bent, which was the Punisher POV with art by Bernie Wrightson. I don't know if you ever read that story. It's just a 4-issue story.
Punisher by Bernie Wrightson?
Yeah, it's called Punisher POV. It was like a 4-issue thing.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one where it's all the, it was in like Marvel Knights, right?
No, it was way before that.
Okay, because there's one that Joe Quesada did that he drew.
Way before then.
That was in Marvel Knights that was all from the point of view of like the guy. I think it's like a dude in a dentist office and Punisher's like fucking with us. You see it through his teeth, like out through his mouth. Anyway, interesting.
Well, so it was just that. And I just remember going back and reading it and I just remember it not being nearly as like twisted as I recalled.
Yeah, well, I mean.
But I mean,
although
had that.
I remember reading all those Garth Ennis in the Marvel Universe Punisher comics that he did before he went and did the Max comic. Like the Wolverine crossover with the little people with no legs and all that stuff. Like, and I was like, that's some pretty dark stuff. And I skimmed through the other day. I'm like, oh, no, it's still really disturbing, dark stuff.
This one.
Oh, cool.
Jim Starlin.
Oh, Jim Starlin wrote it. That's
yeah, cool. It was Starlin writes it. So
Nick Fury's in there. Nice. I love Jim Starlin.
Go check it out.
Stephen Grant talks about him a little bit in the podcast episode coming up, just claiming that he's sort of the reason why everything went super spacey for a while at Marvel.
Hmm. Well, spacey's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
All right. Well, moving on. Two.
You don't like the movie? Change the channel.
Mojo.
Yeah, old Mojo.
Yeah, old Mojo.
So I'm going to suggest a 1980s classic from 1984, starring screenplay by Chuck Russell. I believe it was it directed by him as well? No, directed by Joseph Rubin. Chuck Russell wrote a movie that I deeply, or directed a movie I deeply love that I feel is undertended, which is, or underwatched, which is The Blob from the 80s movie. It's a fantastic horror movie. But this movie stars Dennis Quaid, Max Van Sydow, Christopher Plummer, and it is called, and David Patrick Kelly, who you may recognize as the Warriors guy from the Warriors. And it was Dreamscape from 1984. It kind of reminded me a little bit of this with jumping between all these sort of crazy, crazy things. And it's also in the 80s as well. It plays a guy that has psychic powers who is co-opted into a program to help people deal with issues in their sleep. So he can go into people's dreams and interact with their issues. He helps a kid overcome a snake monster that he keeps seeing in his dreams. But there's a more nefarious government plot to keep the president from disarming the nukes by using this to either influence his dreams or kill him if it doesn't work out. So it is very interesting, very fun little movie that kind of reminded me a bit of this episode with the and some of the storm stuff with jumping between all these different realities all through dreams. It's a fun movie. Check it out. Dreamscape. Plus, look at that cast. When I was a kid, I used to think Max Van Sydow and Christopher Plummer were the same person. And then when I saw this movie with them together, I was like, oh, no, they don't look that much alike, especially when they were younger. But, yeah, great episode.
All right. Well, check that out, everyone. Well, all right. Let's go to the next segment of the day. It's one we haven't done for a while.
What were you doing? Playing with matches?
We're going to do some X-16-bit gaming.
Oh, shit.
Super Nintendo Scalehorn. Where I'm going to rank the 16-bit X-Men games.
All right.
X-Men adjacent, which I, off the top of my head, is six games. That would be X-Men and X-Men 2 Clone Wars for Sega Genesis, Spider-Man X-Men Arcade's Revenge, which is for multiple systems, X-Men Mutant Apocalypse.
Apocalypse!
Oh my god, actually, I think there's a Mutant Apocalypse 2. And
Electric Boogaloo?
I'm gonna have to look. Shit, was there a Mutant Apocalypse 2? And now I gotta look that up, and it'll refresh my memory on the game. Mutant Apocalypse 2, I think they did. And there's Wolverine Adamantium Rage for the Super Nintendo.
Adamantium Rage. What a dumb title. Yeah.
Mutant Apocalypse. No, I don't think there was a Mutant Apocalypse 2. If there was, oh, no, if there was, I didn't play it. All right. So, I'm going to rank these. So, coming in at the bottom of this is Wolverine Adamantium Rage. I could not get into that game. I wanted to love that game, just like I wanted to love Wolverine for the NES. And I did not. I did not love that game. And next, I will have to say, second to bottom, is Arcade's Revenge. That game, I wanted it to be better than it was, too. It had Spider-Man, it had the X-Men. It should have been the best game ever. And it was not.
And it was not.
No. Next for me, and I think this one might be a little controversial, because I think it certainly has some people that think it's better than the original, would be X-Men 2 Clone Wars. Great game. Doesn't have the nostalgia for me.
It's an X-Men game called Clone Wars? Weird.
Yep. Yep, Clone Wars, or Clone Saga. I think it's Clone Wars. Maybe it's Clone Saga. But it's the second one for Sega. Just had a lot of what the first one has, but it didn't have quite the charm, I felt like. The next one for me will be X-Men Mutant Apocalypse, which should have been, could have taken the top, because the controls are amazing. The way it controls is the best. It's so much better than my number one pick. But it wasn't multiplayer. And that's a big drawback for me on Super Nintendo. One of the big great things about Super Nintendo for me was, like most things for Super Multiplayer. So that was a disappointment for me as a kid, because you just wanted to take that from my number one pick, which is X-Men for Sega, and bring that multiplayer experience to the Super Nintendo, which was always smoother and always seemed a little more advanced. But yeah, the X-Men for Sega, go play it. It's like the best. I think it's the best X-Men game maybe ever. I haven't played every X-Men game, certainly, because there's newer ones, but it's just so good. I mean, the controls are a little stiff, but it's not so much the game. It's the Sega controller that's stiff. Sega Genesis controllers, those big buttons, you just got to smash them, man. Like, they're not sensitive enough. That's why I always liked Super Nintendo more than Sega Genesis 2. That Genesis controller is a nightmare. It's a disaster. It was never good. It just looks cool. But that X-Men game, maybe can, if I can find a way, will be the next one we do on our video game playthrough series there, Andre. It's two-player simultaneous. We might be able to rock that out together. That'd be fun.
It's you and me and her. And simultaneous you.
So it might be a seven-part series of us trying to beat it over and over again.
No, don't we have a limited quarters?
I also don't know how it works, because the funny thing about X-Men for Sega is you actually have to hit the reset button and reset the game at a certain point to continue on in the game.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and they don't even tell you that. Like, you just get to a point, and the screen stops going, and you're just stuck. And there's this, like, Mojo comes up on this TV, and as soon as you see him, that means you're supposed to reset the game, but they don't tell you that.
It's kind of like the old E.T. game, where, like, you just fall in a hole, you're done. The one for the Atari?
Yeah.
You're in a hole. You're never getting out. You're done.
So, yeah. Check that out, everyone. X-Men for Sega. Maybe we'll get that on the playthrough.
That'd be fun. Be some fun. I'm down for that.
It's a good game. And what else? We want to do anything else here tonight? We want to play a game? Do we want to do anything like that?
It's up to you, man. You got a minute? I got a little bit of time. Do you want to do it?
All right. Well, what should we do here? We've got some different games. All right, let's do this one. In the honor of Mojo.
Surely you've learned by now that there is no more important work than teaching the young.
Let's make a mutant, shall we? Like Mojo does. So this is the game where Andre and I both pick a physical characteristic and a power.
We haven't done this in a long time.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be fun. And then we build our mutant team that we've been building, which we have other characters, which maybe eventually I'll go back and figure out what those were and cobble this team together.
It's going to be such a mismatch, weird-ass team.
Oh, it is a weird team. The only one I remember is the guy who's like super attractive to ladies during the day, but at night.
Yeah, but not at night. That actually is kind of clever. I feel like we should. I might have to use that idea for a comic book someday.
Well, I think this team that we're cobbling together would make a fun team book, just because it's so. It's like Alpha Flight, but crazier and wackier, and like I don't know.
Well, I still think there's some merit to the idea that when we're talking about, like, you know, the idea of mutants hunting down the Nazis that experimented on them. You know, as a full thing, like if they just made the Magneto movie, that how much better it would have been, or like the you know, first class. So you know, I still think there's some merit to that. Maybe not mutants like Marvel mutants, but you know, people with powers or something.
Yeah, people even gifted powers by those experiments. I mean, that's
exactly. That's kind of what I was thinking, but
that's like the Wolverine story kind of. Yeah, all right. Well, why don't you go first with a power?
Power. Super speed.
Super speed. Okay. It's a classic. I mean, a game breaker. You don't need many more powers if you have super speed.
That's right.
So to go with that super speed, it almost needs to be a power that is almost... Achilles heel for the super speed, because or else it's just a bit OP. So maybe like super speed. Oh, I'm actually going to go with a physical characteristic. So this character has super speed, but terrible balance.
They won't be able to run. They just fall over.
But you have to find other ways to use this super speed.
Oh my God. All right.
Because the physical characteristic, I don't know, maybe it's something to do with the feet that makes it so they can't run fast. But it's just like, yeah, there's a barrier there.
All right.
Like maybe an injury, like an inner ear injury or something that just gives you terrible balance.
It's got swimmer's ear.
Caught a fish hook in the ear or something.
He's got swimmer's ear. That's it.
Got walleye vision. He can't run because he'd run into a wall or something.
Walleye. Nice. So what's next? A physical trait?
Yeah, physical trait.
Did I already say purple hair before?
Yes.
I did. I like purple hair.
Clearly.
Physical trait.
Yeah. For a character.
Okay. There are
super strength with bad balance, or super speed with bad balance.
All right,
bad vision. Either works for my purpose.
Much like the character Slapstick, they are a cartoon character.
Makes sense for this clumsy super speedster.
Exactly. Right? He's like a chicken or something.
That's good. That's good. I like like a chicken or something.
Like a cartoon chicken.
Isn't your character now a cartoon chicken?
No, okay, just cartoon, like that.
Anthropomorphic chicken?
It's keeping human. That's too funny. Yeah.
All right. Okay, so a cartoon character with super speed and terrible balance, and just, now it's a character, now my physical trait can just be giant feet, like big cartoony feet, so that's why he can't run super fast.
He's a clown.
Too awkward, yeah. Like,
is he a clown to you? Does he make you laugh, Davin? Is that what he does? Is he a clown?
Yeah, let's make him a clown, a super speedy clown.
He's in a full. So Ronald McDonald is running around like a cartoon version, just running around.
Oh no, a mime.
Ooh, a super fast mime. That's super interesting.
Super fast miming. Yeah, super fast mime. And like can talk, but it's just super dedicated to the craft.
All right, that's good. Yeah, why not? Okay. Why not?
Yeah. You are no robo.
What are we going to call this guy? Do we have to come up with a name, too?
Oh, yeah, we do have to come up with a name.
Silent but deadly. Because he's a mime. I'm kidding.
Wait. Oh, but the silent could come
dead in. Silence.
Dead silence.
Sounds like a villain, but I like it, too.
Kind of. Or
I like Dead Silence. I think it's good.
Yeah, I like Dead Silence.
Let's or Silent Running. Silent Runner.
No, not. Oh, because he's. Oh, Silent Running. Oh, God, that's a good one. Silent Runner.
Silent Runner. I like Silent Runner.
But he doesn't run. That's the whole thing.
Well, he's super. Well, he tries.
No, I like Dead Silence. All right, that's good. Because he could be kind of a tragic character, you know, or a tragic. Kind of maniacal character. Sure, why not?
All I need now is for you to contact your students, Professor.
All right, your homework is to go and watch the movie Foxcatcher starring Steve Carell.
Oh, my God. No, it's not.
That's a fun connection to Davin's movie podcast. Your homework is to watch the next episode, Life Death Part 2, which will be out in a week's time.
Yep. Oh, that's not the next episode, is it? Life Death Part 2?
Oh, that's maybe it isn't,
some,
is it?
I think there's some in between it.
Oh, snap.
And they let you be a professor.
They don't. They don't at all. I'm not a professor. There's none.
What?
Okay, wait. No, hold on. No, Remember It is the next episode.
Okay.
As Genosha prepares to join the UN, select members of the team head to the island nation to be honorees. Back at the mansion, a behind-the-scenes press event risks airing the X-Men's dirty laundry. Wow, Life Death Part 2 is episode 6. Okay. This is episode 5.
All right.
So that Remember It.
That sounds full of intrigue, Remember It.
Full of intrigue. Very intriguing. I'm intrigued.
Well, you can support our show at patreon.com/X-Men Review Show. You can get merch at redbubble.com/people/X-Men Review Show.
Get on up on that merch.
Yeah, we'll get some more designs in there eventually, but there's 7 designs in there right now for your enjoyment.
7 sexy designs.
Any merch you like, stickers, t-shirts, anything, mugs, anything. Anything your mind can think of. Contact us at xmemreviewshow@gmail.com.
Anything your mind can think of.
Follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And find our audio-only version wherever you get your podcast. And please like, give us some reviews, people. And subscribe. But only good reviews. If you're not giving us like a 5 out of 5, you don't have to. You don't have to give us a review.
Well, no. Give us a chance
to... We can take criticism.
Give us a chance to explain. You know, give us a chance to... Give us a chance to find out what you didn't like.
Exactly.
And if it's because we mentioned something political you disagree with, and that's the whole reason you hate our show, then fuck you. But aside from that...
And you're a member of the Friends of Humanity anyway, and you should address your own problems.
That's right. And good luck finding an X-Men podcast that doesn't have to do with the wokeness of X-Men.
Oh, they probably exist.
God.
UFpodcast.com. You can check us out there because we're a proud member of that United Federation of Podcasts. And speaking of that, United Federation of Podcasts.
Well, by the time this episode airs, my episode with Gary K. Wolf will have been out on Monday.
Ooh, can't wait.
Great chat with the creator of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He wrote the book Who Censored Roger Rabbit, which, spoiler alert, I read. I didn't have it finished when I did the episode, but I'd finished it since, and it's a great book. It's a really, really fun book on its own right, regardless of its connection to the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's very different, but very good on its own right. So go and check that out. Also, make sure to find us on Apple Music and, rate and subscribe, which is always nice, because I think that's one of the few places you can do it on the Apple Podcast stuff. And, tune in to another episode. I can't remember. Stephen Grant is the next episode, which is the former writer for Marvel. Created the character Whisper, which is kind of an indie comic character that was a big deal back in the day. Also Punisher, Incredible Hulk, Moon Knight, which is funny because his name is Stephen Grant. And that's the name of one of Moon Knight's alter egos. We talked about that as well. It is purely a coincidence, but it's fun.
Okay.
And some other stuff. So, yeah, it's a great episode. Great chat with him. He has some great stories. about his work on a lot of other projects as well, and, you know, get involved with Hollywood when one of his comics, Two Guns, became the movie starring Mark Wahlberg and Denzel Washington.
Hmm. All right. Check that out, everybody.
Check it out. Do it. Do it now.
And then, of course, as already mentioned, you can check out our review of movies such as Foxcatcher, Cool Runnings, and Eight Men Out on our last episode of Hold Up a Movie Podcast. And our next one, I believe, is on bicycle movies. They're movies that feature bicycles.
Bicycle.
I want
to. What? Are you doing one on bicycles? You're doing one on bicycles?
Murphy's.
That's incredibly obscure. Is Bicycle Thieves one of your movies? It's like a classic movie.
Is what?
Bicycle Thieves one of your movie? No. The Bicycle Thief? What? Hmm. How did you not pick that? It's like one of the artiest. What? It's like one of the artiest, most classic movies of all time.
Artiest is in a good way or a bad way?
It's black and white. It's an early movie. It's black and white, and it's a French movie. It's supposed to be insanely good. What are your bike movies?
I picked Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Okay, what are the other two?
I forget.
A Premium Rush starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Is that really one of them? Oh my god,
that's Murphy's pick.
Of course it is. Exactly. What were the other one? I don't think I've ever seen it, so you probably will, though. You're probably going to hate it. I don't remember what the other one was. What's the other one in your list? Can you think of it? Do you have your picture there, your graphic? I'll tell you if you're putting your graphic up.
Well, no, I don't have that graphic
handy. Oh, okay.
I have the list here. I can tell you.
When are we doing Giant Monsters?
Bikes is next. The other one is called The Triplets of Belleville.
Oh, that actually is that's a classic animated film.
Okay,
we'll check
that out.
He did the
Childhood, and then Bugs, and then Giant Monsters.
Childhood, Bugs, and Giant Monsters. Okay. Do you have your Giant Monster movie picked out yet?
Nope. Or do I? Murphy picked Godzilla Minus One, which I'm glad because I haven't seen it yet.
I've already seen it, but it's fantastic.
All right. Did I pick anything? No, I didn't.
Depending on what I think I know what I'm going to pick. You're going to pick something old?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, I want to pick. I'll tell you now. This is a big. There's a lot of choices. I mean, I'd love to pick Pacific Rim or something, but I want to pick something that maybe somebody hasn't seen that's really good. And I'm going to pick the movie Colossal, starring Anne Hathaway,
I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's super good. It's her and
giant monsters in it. Eh?
It does. It's got two. But Jason Sudeikis is in it as well, and her. And it's kind of a movie about alcoholism and other things, but it's very, very good. And giant monsters are in it. You'll see.
Yeah, cool. That sounds interesting.
I think you'll like it.
Look forward to that.
It's more of a rush. You tend to like movies that are like more quieter, like less big budgety ones, and this is definitely one of those.
I find action boring most of the time, unless it's the X-Men working together. That's super exciting. But other than that, I just wait for the action scenes to be over and people.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. You get there, buddy.
Except in other. I have my niche for action. Like Marvel action can excite me as well. Like the Endgame big fight. Like I'm not a statue. Of course, that's exciting and amazing.
I'm just a man, damn it.
Though the first time I saw it, I didn't really enjoy that scene because it was such a long movie before that. And by that point, it was just like a big action schlock thing that I didn't really pick up on. I had to go back and watch the Endgame thing again to really enjoy it. Because there are a lot of small moments in that scene that you got to kind of just have to pick up on. Anyway, the Super Mater Brothers, they review reality shows over there. We're doing our big crossover with the Mary Mater Marvel Society when Wolverine Deadpool comes out. That'll be fun. Looking forward to that movie. I mean, I don't want any more spoilers. Like, my God, the internet is trying its hardest to spoil that movie.
Really? Why? Just because of the picture we keep posting?
Yeah, it's just like, I feel like I know too much already. And of course, if you like Star Trek, Live Long and Podcast is the channel for you. We have tons of content, all various and amazing and fun. We have a ranking convention, a uniform forum, you might say, coming up here very soon, as well as a radio theater of the TNG episode Conundrum, a bit of a gender swapped edition. It'll be fun. And Trivial Debates, Aiming on Track, Hellbound Podcast with Alex Blackburn, Michael Chan, and Hey, Did You See This One with Jason Phillips?
Did you see it? Waters. Did you see
did
it?
Did you see it?
Did you see it?
Hey, did you see it?
Did you see it?
Well, that's what they
would you look at that?
Know. Would you look at that?
Would you just look at it?
Hot enough? Is it hot enough for you?
It's not the heat of humidity, buddy.
All right. Well, that's it from us, I think, tonight. Which is actually more of the afternoon right now. I'm just used to saying tonight with this show.
Well, it'll be night when people watch it.
True enough. We're going to stream this for you on Tuesday. So until then, enjoy and enjoy the next episode of X-Men. Because that's remember and remember it.
Remember it. Don't you forget.
Don't you forget it.
Don't you forget about the show.
Catch you next time.
Next time.
I know a part of you wants to hang here, but that's not living.